My name is Robert Henson. I'm currently in the UK. I spent most of the last 20 years in Hong Kong. And the reason why I left Hong Kong was simply because of compulsory vaccination in order to work, go out and travel, or virtually do anything. Originally, this was all voluntary as everything started out. And then a number of firms, I think the first one was the Hong Kong Football Club, said, if you're not vaccinated, no promotion, no renewal of your contract, and essentially once the contract ends, you can't work for us. There was not too much resistance for that, so then the Hong Kong government applied it to all their staff, and then other firms like CLP and the Hong Kong Jockey Club rolled it out, and eventually every firm in Hong Kong, to please the Hong Kong government, had the policy, no jab, no job. And by that, it meant actually having three injections, not just one or two, but you've got to have had all three in order to enter the workplace. So it was impossible to work there. And also, you had QR codes, so you were not allowed to go into restaurants or shopping malls or go hardly anywhere unless you had a QR code, which also told you your vaccination status. So no vaccine, life over in Hong Kong. As a practicing barrister, I'm very wary when a vaccine company has zero liability for any damage the product will do. And in Hong Kong, when the press was slightly freer than now, after the initial stage of vaccination, there were injuries and deaths every single day the vaccination was rolled out. And on top of that, the Hong Kong government said to children, unless you're double vaccinated, you can't go to school. Well, in the first month alone, 38 children keeled over with heart problems after the vaccination. So there are serious problems with that vaccination, real injuries with the vaccination, and real deaths directly resulting from that vaccination in young people as well as elderly people. And I'd like to give you a couple of stats on that. In 2020, for a full 12 months of COVID, without any vaccination, there were 148 COVID deaths. That's the government's own data. And then by March 2022, after a full vaccination program, the number of registered COVID deaths increased from a mere 148 to 9,138, which tells me that either the vaccine is not effective, or actually that could be part of the problem. Or the third one is, of course, the government exaggerated the death rates. Either way, in 2020, for a full 12 months, 148 COVID deaths without vaccination tells me there isn't a problem. But after vaccination, there were real deaths, no doubt about it, and real injuries after the vaccine. There's no way I would put one of those vaccines inside my body ever. To start off with, actually, in 2020, when there were only 148 deaths, there were no real serious lockdowns as such. So, for example, you could visit a doctor anytime you wanted, visit a dentist anytime you wanted, no real serious lockdowns as such. And it's very easy to visit a doctor in Hong Kong. It's all private, and you would pay about the equivalent of £25 to see a medical doctor, a generalist. And if you wanted to see a specialist doctor, you'd pay between about £50 and £70, and you could see them the following day. And if you wanted to see a dentist, you could see it the following day. Now, that's one advantage of Hong Kong over England, where people could not see doctors, could not see dentists, or had to do it by a video conference. That didn't happen in Hong Kong. So Hong Kong was better in that respect. But what Hong Kong, the reason in Hong Kong and a whole across China for the lockdown was nothing to do with COVID. And I know this for certain. It was all about stopping protests. In 2019, Hong Kong had some very violent, vicious protests. And also across China, from top to bottom, across the whole of China, there were protests. And the way to stop that was to invent something called COVID-19 or exaggerate flu. And that resulted in people being locked, sort of limited in their ability to go out in Hong Kong, and in mainland China, full-on lockdowns. And nothing to do with COVID, it was all about stopping protests. And I wish people would read about this, engage their brain, and start to examine real data. And as for China, yes, it did have vicious lockdowns. And that did not work. COVID has, or the myth of COVID has been going on since 2020, and it's not stopped. There's been continuous lockdowns and continuous riots against these lockdowns in China, and it's very unstable as a result of this. Lockdown has not worked in China. It's been a total disaster policy. And I think there's been recent violent attacks in Shanghai, quite serious confrontations there, and they are spreading throughout China. And as the rebellion increases, the viciousness of the lockdown is increasing. Lockdowns do not work. And I would debate Martin on that as somebody that's actually been involved at the heart of Hong Kong Chinese politics for 10 years as a central committee member to one of the advisors to the chief executive of Hong Kong. And I would love a proper, serious analytical debate because I know the inside of this. And when I hear these outsiders commentating and in la-di-da dreamland, it makes me quite angry because it's just misleading people. It's not what happened, and it's just not reality. I've been in England now about 6 weeks. The good part is there are no real lockdowns here at the moment. Few people's where I am in Suffolk, it's actually Matt Hancock's constituency. Few people are wearing masks. Could do a pub quiz last night, go out as normal. Things in that sense are pretty good. The nightmare for me is the sheer bureaucracy of the UK. For example, in Hong Kong, I always used a pay-as-you-go mobile, and I could put the equivalent of £5 or £10 on it, and that would last 6 months, and I could put another £5 on it, no problem. Here, you have to renew it every month, and if you don't lose the credit on the phone, you lose it, which I think is just ripping people off. I look at the banks here, and the shell is the same, but when you go inside, all you see are a series of cash points and no tellers anymore. And that's quite shocking to myself. When I go to supermarkets, all I hear and see are tap, tap. No one's using cash anymore. And I think that's a real disaster coming. People are building their own prison. And the other thing that stands out is how the British government, I'm insisting everything is done online. Online everything. Every form is online. That's very dangerous because it's really easy to hack any computer. Any online banking can be hacked with ease, and the government's website can be hacked with ease. And again, I know this from practical experience. I've seen it actually being done. So I think, and be quite crude here, you've got to have had a brain bypass to use online banking or any government form. And you can try this yourself. You can go to a library and you can try filling in a government form. And if you go back there again, it will remember your details and previous person's details who've tried to fill the form in online on a public computer. Very dangerous for data and data theft. The government claims to be protecting data, but it's exposing people to fraud and data theft. It's absolutely madness what's going on with a cashless society and an online society. That needs to stop, and people need to really wake up, start going back to cash and saying no more online banking, no more online government forms. And another tedious thing, I'll just give you one other practical point. I went into Tunbridge Wells and I tried to park the car in a car park and I wanted to pay cash. And it wouldn't allow me to pay cash in any car park in Tunbridge Wells. You had to use your debit card or a credit card. Again, that's madness because if you're using a credit card and it's got a high value on it where people can run up debt or a debit card and they get it wrong, somebody could drain your account. You should never be in a position having to force to use a debit card or a credit card for anything. And again, that's actually where Hong Kong is much better. Hong Kong is still a cash society. Banks still have real people in them. And you can use cash for everything. At all government forms, still, you can fill in on a paper form and take it to the government office, pay cash, and get whatever visa you need. That's far superior to what's happening in England. England really need to kick up the whatever, the way it's gone with this. Electronic everything. It really is madness, and people must be pretty dumb not to realize how easy computers can be hacked. I mean, I'll give you one example of that. I mean, a very famous one. I think it was a guy called Gary McKinnon, and he hacked into NASA and the American military databases. And, he could have started almost a nuclear war with that. I think that's well reported. Well, when I was at university, people could hack into HSBC bank accounts, Standard Chartered bank accounts, anything. The really talented people I was at university with. It's the same today. I mean, people really need to wake up and stop using online things. That's a big problem coming. I'm currently living in Suffolk, where Matt Hancock is my local MP. He had the nerve to say, this really is a hell of a nerve, for him to actually say, oh, nothing to do with me because I just followed the advice given and they recommended that course of action. I don't believe this. So many people are now hiding behind advisors. They only listen to advisors that tell them what they want to hear. And there were advisors at the time, very prominent medical doctors, saying you should not be putting these people in care homes. Matt Hancock and that government, they should be in prison. I mean, really, because if you're taking somebody and causing them to die by putting the two categories of people together, you should be liable for that death. No doubt about it. These should be criminal charges, not just civil charges. And they should be named individuals facing those criminal charges. The leaders of a country are the best person to destroy a country or take a country to war. And it's back to the real basics. I think there is a cabal or a group of people that do want to have continual war. And unfortunately, all the leaders in every country at the moment just want war. And they will, I think Russia and China will possibly come together, and you may end up with some kind of a third world war with America, maybe. But that's probably what the leadership of all the countries want. And that's very bad, because people foolishly put trust in their leaders. And that's a very, very foolish thing to do. All the leaders want the same thing, which is not to represent their people. It's to represent what I call the cabal, the elites, the few people who want to wipe out a large proportion of the population. And war is one of the most effective ways of doing it. That's how I analyze it. I think you might have different details on it, but that's how I've always viewed it, in terms of leaders always wanted to kill their own people. I mean, China's notorious for killing its own people or harming its own people. It seems not to like them very much, whether it be a one-child policy, forced abortion, or in with this COVID thing, just forcing people into quarantine camps where people have committed suicide, they've just died through starvation. Leaders seem to want to harm their own people. First, the resources thing. Again, it's back to what I think, that you have these globalists, leaders of their countries, that want to harm their country. Thatcher was the one that privatized industry. And then Labour really continued down that role. And as a result of that, industry was closed down and manufacturing has gone to China. So because most things are now manufactured in China or India, but particularly China, then countries can't be self-sufficient anymore. And I think that was part of the globalist plan all along, to move the manufacturing bases away from individual countries and individual independence of countries to someone like China. And then they can literally, as you say, cut off your supplies and stop you doing things, stop you feeding your people and making things. And that's exactly what's happened. And people have been dealt in financially through this. If you look at certain groups within the UK that are out there to help Chinese investment in the UK. And again, these are available on the internet. You can see Jim O'Neill, you can see Michael Heseltine, you can see Tony Blair, you can see Peter Mandelson, are all part of these groups that are helping Chinese investment into the UK. And they sell it as a good thing, as bringing money into the UK. But in reality, they're taking industry away from the UK, putting it into China, and making a lot of money out of it themselves. In terms of the biological warfare part, the second part, I'm not too familiar with everything, but I, again, would not surprise me if any of these people actually set off a nuclear bomb. They're more than capable of doing it at the moment, more than capable. China's feeling very, very strong at the moment, and it's positioned itself as a global world leader. It really is talking that way. And it's very confident, and the West's actually given China that confidence. I think nuclear power is very, very foolish, because If you want to bomb a country, England's now got more and more of these nuclear power stations. All you have to do is to attack the nuclear power station, and you can wipe out the whole country. Very, very easily do that. So nuclear power in itself is not wise. It doesn't surprise me. I think is it EDF, the French one, that's doing it. I'd have to check that. But yeah, the downside of the Chinese doing it is they will control the way. Not just the actual physical thing, but the policies that follow from nuclear power. And that would simply mean probably higher energy costs for the UK. And I'd also be very concerned about what they're going to do with the nuclear waste. Where's it going to go? Because it's got a lot of half-lives of nuclear waste. And if it's not disposed of properly, that creates even more problems. And the idea that any overseas company can run your utilities, again, is absolute madness. And that comes from the privatization under Thatcher, where she privatized the energy industry. And this is what made way for countries like China to actually run the UK energy industry. I mean, in addition to that, I think I mentioned before another program, you've got Li Ka-shing from Hong Kong, who's really part of China, who owns a lot of the water companies, the gas companies, the energy companies already. And they can set policies on smart meters, on anything they want, because they've got such a control and influence. That's not good for the British consumer at all. Between January and March this year, 20,000 people per week have been leaving Hong Kong. That tells a story in itself, given the population is only 7.25 million. So 20,000 people a week leaving Hong Kong. That suggests real, genuine dissatisfaction with the way things are. My 20 years in Hong Kong, the first, I would say, until about 2019, Hong Kong was the freest, safest, bestest place to live in the whole wide world. It really was very, very free. Very businesslike, the ultimate free market economy. You could say what you wanted, do what you wanted, go where you wanted, no restrictions, no monitoring, complete freedom. One of the best places ever to live in the world. Plus, you got a wonderful sunny climate, and you were never more than 15 minutes away from a beach or the sea. But since the 2019 riots or protests, Hong Kong is becoming virtually another Chinese city. It's lost its Hong Kong feel, and it's very much just another Chinese city. It's very much changed since 2019. The last three leaders, I would say, CY Leung, Carrie Lam, and the next one in waiting, John Lee, will just do whatever Beijing tells them to do. So yes, it's just another Chinese city. China is very target-based, so you have different provinces, and each one has a leader, and then they have a certain flexibility. And then what would happen is the main leaders in China would say, "Hey, you've got to meet your target," and suddenly they would have to change policy at the drop of a hat to meet a target. And so the leader of the area, the province or the county, whatever equivalent you want to call it, just has to respond immediately to what the real central leadership tell them. And that can just lead to policy switches from black and white, just by clicking your fingers. That's what can happen. The reason why I actually joined the pro-Beijing party with the former security minister, whose name was Regina Ip, a very controversial person, and we set that party up over 10 years ago, was because when I went to Hong Kong, I thought it was the best place ever in the world to live. And the people that wanted to wreck it were not actually China. China wasn't interested in Hong Kong at the time. He just said, just get on with your own life. The people that wanted to wreck it were the so-called Democrats, who wanted to bring democracy to Hong Kong and a whole slew of legislation which would take away freedoms, right down to ban the incandescent light bulb, politically correct speech, environmental stuff. These were the policies, not of Beijing. These were the policies of the Democrats, funded by, if you like, the Western culture. Western people, for example, like the British consulate, the American consulate, were pushing for democracy in Hong Kong. And I saw how that had totally failed in England, And I like the way Hong Kong was. And that's why I joined, well, actually set up the party, the founding member of this with the security minister, to stop this push for democracy and this push for Western influence into Hong Kong. And that's why we originally set it up. And we were not anything like a dictator party. It was a very free market party that just didn't want to ruffle China's feathers and to keep at bay all the troublemakers from the West, who I would see bringing in the Western policies that I've left the UK for, to go and live in China for, to live in Hong Kong for. Hong Kong is part of China. But they were pushing that, and that's why I was able to get into Parliament and then stop the ban on the incandescent light bulb. There is no ban on it still. That's important to me. We managed to delay things like the competition bill, which unfortunately ended up being passed, and other pieces of legislation that would have taken away a great deal of freedom in Hong Kong. And on that point, the 2019 riots, no doubt about it, were kicked off a lot by the British consulate in Hong Kong. They were key people in this. And on one of those speeches that I attended, one of those protests that I was, attended, two members of the British consulate brought across an Irish Nobel Peace Prize winner to address a large crowd. And this Nobel Peace Prize winner stand up and say, "We, the people of the UK, stand behind you, the people of Hong Kong, in your fight for democracy, freedom, and your fight against climate change." So all the time, it was actually the Western, the democratic type people that were creating the disturbance. And then that got out of hand, and the whole thing then turned into a vicious, vicious sort of reaction then by mainland China and the Hong Kong administration. At that point, I quit because I didn't want to be part of it. And that's a little bit about my background. I saw them, the British consulates, actually bring across speakers to address the crowds, which essentially were encouraging them to continue protesting. Absolutely. Well, they brought across this Nobel Peace Prize winner from Ireland, and there was a big protest that evening. This was one of the big protests that I attended. It was outside the Minister of Justice, and they blocked off the whole road and surrounded the Ministry of Justice in Hong Kong. And I was sat watching this, and marching up Justice Drive were two members of the British consulate and the Irish Nobel Peace Prize winner. They walked her to the stand, and then she gave the speech encouraging Hong Kong people to continue protesting. That's what I saw with my own eyes. China was not interested in Hong Kong. It was not. It was hands off. It was not remotely interested in it. It's only when these big protests occurred, they had to do something. And that was because they didn't want that level of intensity of protest to get into mainland China. There were bubbles and little outbursts all across China, but nothing at the intense level that was in Hong Kong. I mean, look, we had over 2 million people on the street protesting at one time out of a population of 7.25 million. That's huge. And then every weekend, there were marches of in excess of 500,000 to 1.5 million, blocking off all the streets. They broke into the Houses of Parliament, the equivalent of that, it's called the Legislative Council. They broke into that, smashed it to pieces, ripped down all the symbols of China, put up the British flag inside the Hong Kong Parliament. And, you know, things were way out of hand, and that's what brought down the big crackdown. And this is exactly at the point when COVID came out of nowhere. So, I mean, what's going on in the world? And you look at the UK, and you look at America, and you look at these so-called liberal democracies all around the world, and they're troublemakers. And that's why I set up the party in Hong Kong, to stop these troublemakers coming across, because I didn't like what they were going to do to Hong Kong. 20,000 a day. I'm not sure how many come into the UK, but a substantial number. I would say about a third. They seem to be distributed between Canada, Australia, and the UK. And if you go to some places, you will see almost a very Hong Kong feel that didn't exist before. St. Albans, I think, is one of them, where I miss the glorious sunshine. I mean, it's so beautiful and warm there, and it's got just beautiful, beautiful sun, beautiful beaches. A lot of people don't think of that, but it really does. And I miss the sort of playing tennis in this weather. I miss those rooftops where you can just buy a can of beer for equivalent of about 50p, and sit outside and just chat with friends and just enjoy that sunlight and going running along the seafront. And the use of the octopus card and lots of cash and the ease of doing business, all those things still remain. But of course, you've got to wear masks and you can't really do anything without the vaccine. But I do look back and think, yeah, that was probably the best 20 years ever, I think, by a million miles before things went wrong. And so, well, you couldn't enter any government building, you couldn't enter shopping malls, you couldn't enter supermarkets, you couldn't go to bars and restaurants. It really stops you from doing many, many, many things. And yes, you could still do that. There's a fear that would stop, but that hasn't stopped. Another scary thing they're doing is they're force testing people. So they're still locking down about 40 apartment blocks every single day and force testing people. That's ramming something up their nose and down their throat. And if you found positive, this is the really bad bit, they ship you off to a quarantine camp and you could be stuck there for 21 days and tested every day. Now, a number of people have committed suicide in those places or gone completely cuckoo crazy. And I think yesterday, a very famous actor called Kenneth Jeong died in one of those quarantine hotels. He's played in one of the James Bond movies, Die Another Day, and he's a very famous actor in Hong Kong and China. And he was in a quarantine hotel and he died, I think it was yesterday or the day before. This is the crazy. It's totally upside down logic. I think it's a little like the Stanford experiments, if you remember those, where Stanford University, they have pretend guards and pretend prisoners. And once people become a bit power crazy, they become absolute power crazy. And that's the most frightening thing about Hong Kong and China at the moment, the way COVID has allowed them to treat people and just lock them away like animals. People in these quarantine centres have killed themselves, they've gone cuckoo crazy. Healthy people have gone in there and then kept testing positive for COVID and been trapped in there. Healthy people have gone in there and then got food poisoning or got other diseases. So that's completely mad. And they can just roll up at your house anytime, your apartment block, and force test you and just throw you in one of those places whenever they want. So people are being treated like cattle, and that's not a good thing.